And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, this is December 23rd, 357th day of the year. 8 days remain till this year's in our rearview mirror. There's a lot of people that are say they'll be so happy when that happens. Well, our betters, as they call themselves, are running into quite a lot of problems. Kamala Harris says, well, she was a white man, she'd be treated better. She was chosen as vice president because she was a minority female. So if she was a white male, she wouldn't have gotten that position. Some folks just don't know when they're well off. Chicago is eating itself, as is San Francisco, under the new philosophy, Black Lives Matter, to the point that if they commit a crime, they need it. The guy that hit the parade in Wisconsin got $1,000 bail. Because after all, he was a black male and the DA didn't want to violate his rights or damage his sensibilities by charging him. A number of governors are going to pardon George Floyd, even though he was a convicted criminal, but he's now a minor god, thanks to the media. CNN is sinking rapidly. In fact, they fired all non-essential personnel. If they got rid of, I think his name is Zucker, who doesn't seem to do much except pontificate, that might be beneficial. Well, we'll see. Yesterday, I asked if all those who claim to be psychic would try to communicate with JonBenet Ramsey, who was killed the 25th or 26th of December. Let's see if she can tell us who killed her. Well, as I said, this is the 23rd. Tomorrow's Christmas Eve. Even though a lot of our so-called elected leaders are wanting to cancel Christmas. In 484, the Arian Vandal Kingdom ceases its persecution of Nicene Christianity. 558, Clothar I is crowned King of the Franks. 583, Maya Queen Yolo Icnal is crowned ruler of Pelin the K. 962, the sack of Aleppo is part of the Arab-Byzantine War. Under the future emperor, Nicephorus Phocas, Byzantine troops stormed the city of Aleppo. Remember, Byzantine, or Byzantium as it was called, was actually the Eastern Roman Empire. The main Roman Empire collapsed under the Visigoths, Byzantine came into its own. 1598, Arauco War. Governor of Chile, Martin Garcia Onez de Loyola, is killed in the Battle of Curralaba by Mapuches led by Palantaru. 1688, as part of the Glorious Revolution, King James II of England flees from England to Paris, France. He was deposed in favor of his son-in-law and nephew, William of Orange, and his daughter, Mary. James II was said to be something of a tyrant. So William and Mary didn't have a hard act to follow. 1783, George Washington resigns as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army at the Maryland State House in Annapolis, Maryland. 1793, Battle of Savigny, decisive defeat of the Royalist counter-revolutionaries in the War of the Vendée during the French Revolution. 1815, the novel Emma by Jane Austen is first published. 1876, first day of the Constantinople Conference that resulted in an agreement for political reforms in the Balkans, took place on this date. 1893, the opera Hansel and Gretel by Engelbert Humperdinck is first performed. 1913, the Federal Reserve Act is signed into law by President Woodrow Wilson, created the Federal Reserve System. 1914, World War I. Australian and New Zealand troops arrive in Cairo, Egypt. Also in 1914, World War I, during the Battle of Sarikamish, Ottoman forces mistook one another for Russian troops. This friendly fire incident left 2,000 Ottomans dead and a large number wounded. I guess you could say the Ottomans won that particular battle. 1916, World War I, Battle of Magdaba. Allied forces defeat Turkish forces in the Sinai. 1919, Sex Disqualification Removal Act of 1919 becomes law in the United Kingdom. Now, for those that are wondering what it was, it's an act of Parliament in the UK, became law when it got royal assent December 23rd, 1919. The act enabled women to join the professions and professional bodies, sit on juries, and be awarded degrees. It was a governmental compromise, so to speak, a replacement for more radical private members' bill called the Women's Emancipation Bill, and they weren't ready to emancipate women, but they gave them a little bit of rope with which they were sure they were going to hang themselves. 1936, Colombia becomes a signatory to the Buenos Aires Copyright Treaty. Also in 1936, Spanish Civil War. Spanish Republic legalizes the Regional Defense Council of Aragon. 1941, World War II. After 15 days of fighting, the Imperial Japanese Army occupies Wake Island. 1947, a transistor first demonstrated at Bell Laboratories. When I was growing up, we had a little radio. Didn't have any batteries. But you had two clips. And if you plugged them right, for example, I used to have a metal fence I would attach it to. It would play beautifully. I haven't seen one of those in years. 1948, seven Japanese military and political leaders convicted of war crimes by the International Military Tribunal for the Far East are executed by Allied occupation authorities in Sugamo Prison in Tokyo, Japan. 1954, first successful kidney transplants performed by J. Hartwell Harrison and Joseph Murray. 1955, the first film adaptation of Vieno Lina's novel, The Unknown Soldier, directed by Edvin Lane, premieres. 1960, Kaka Saarinen, the Pirakkonen, is murdered in a so-called oven homicide case in Krotila in Finland. It's took place in the village of Krotila. It's one of Finland's best-known homicides, and the killer has never been officially identified. Now, Hika Saarinen was last seen alive in December 1960. She was 33 years old. Lived with her husband, Pentti Frans Olivi Saarinen, in an old, large wooden house. That was actually her childhood home she had inherited from her grandparents. Now, they had taken out a bank loan about the other inheritors. They had five children. Due to family trouble and the father's violent tendencies, were adopted by the state and placed in foster homes. According to the neighbors, Pentti was extremely jealous and violent toward Hika while under the influence of alcohol. He repeatedly threatened to kill his wife in a way that couldn't be traced. Well, Christmas Day, 1960, Hika and Pentti's eldest son arrived to visit his parents' house for the holidays. along with his schoolmate. He came in a day before he was supposed to. Found the front door unlocked, so they crossed the entry room, entered the foyer. This time, Pinty came out of the kitchen to the foyer, locking the door behind him, blocked the boys' way, wanted to know what they were doing early. When the son asked where his mother was, Pinty said she had left while he was sleeping. Later that night, the boys went to fetch more bedclothes in the master bedroom, which is located behind the kitchen. Son wanted to know why the kitchen was dark. The father said the lamp was broken. Well, odds are the husband killed the wife. However, that was never formally proclaimed. 1968, the 82 sailors in USS Pueblo were released after 11 months of internment in North Korea. 1970, North Tower of the World Trade Center in Manhattan was topped out at 1,368 feet, making it the tallest building in the world. And also in 1970, Democratic Republic of the Congo becomes a one-party state. 1972, 6.5 magnitude earthquake strikes the Nicaraguan capital of Managua. Over 10,000 people are killed. 1972, the 16 survivors of the Andes flight disaster are rescued after 73 days. They survived by cannibalism. 1978, Alitalia Flight 4128 crashes into the Tyrrhenian Sea while on approach to Falcone Borsellino Airport in Palermo, Italy. 108 people are killed. 1979, Soviet-Afghan War. Soviet Union forces occupy Kabul, the Afghan capital, that we, with a bow and several billion dollars, handed back to the Taliban, thanks to King Biden. 1984, after experiencing an engine fire, Aeroflot Flight 3519 attempts to make an emergency landing at Krasnoyarsk International Airport. Unfortunately, it crashed. Of the 111 people on board, 110 are killed. 1986, Voyager, piloted by Dick Rufin and... Rutan and Gianna Yeager, landed at Edwards Air Force Base in California. Becomes the first aircraft to fly nonstop around the world without aerial or ground refueling. 1990, history of Slovenia and a referendum. 88.5% of Slovenia's overall electorate vote for independence from Yugoslavia. 2002, a U.S. MQ-1 Predator shot down by an Iraqi MiG-25 in the first combat engagement between a drone and a conventional aircraft. 2003, an explosion at the Petrochina Chuandongbai natural gas field in Kwai County in Chongqing, China, kills at least 234. 2007, an agreement's made for the Kingdom of Nepal to be abolished and the country to become a federal republic, within the prime minister becoming the head of state. Unfortunately, the king lost his job. 2015, bomb explodes at Istanbul's Sabiha Gökçen Airport, kills one airport cleaner. The Kurdistan Freedom Hawks claim responsibility for the attack 4 days later. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Birthday of the Queen Sylvia, an official flag flying day in Sweden. Children's Day in South Sudan and in the Sudan itself. Christian Feast Day, Abbasid in the Coptic Church. Bainham, Sarah, and the 40 Martyrs in the Coptic Church. Dagobert II, who was a Merovingian ruler. John Cantius, O. Emmanuel, Passati in the Coptic Church. Thorlak Thorarinsson, patron saint of Iceland. The last day of preparation before Christmas. Victoria, day of all level operational control structures servicemen in Ukraine. Festivus, a parody holiday made popular by the sitcom Seinfeld. Human Light and Secular Humanism in the U.S. Kisan Diwas in Uttar Pradesh in India. Night of the Radishes in Oaxaca City in Mexico. Tibbs Eve in Newfoundland and Labrador. Tom Balcock's Eve in Mouse Hole in Cornwall. And in Egypt, it's Victory Day. All right, let's see what else we got. Six, nine, 19, Boniface V begins his reign as Catholic Pope. 1482, the Peace of Aitrich, now Arras, concluded between Louis XI of France and Maximilian of Austria, ends the war in the Burgundian succession. 1588, the Day of the Dagger, Henry, Duke of Guise, leader of the Catholic League, is assassinated by the bodyguards of King Henry III at the Chateau de Blois. 1620, French Huguenots declare war on King Louis XIII. 1672, Giovanni Cassini discovers Rhea, satellite of Saturn. King James II that I talked about, who fled to France, was the last Roman Catholic British monarch. After that, there were Church of England. 1690, English astronomer John Flamsteed observes Uranus without realizing it's never been previously discovered. 1715, Russian and Prussian troops occupy Stralsund. 1724, Emperor Charles VI, Holy Roman Emperor, names Archduchess Maria Elizabeth of Austria land guardian of the Austrian Netherlands. 1751, France, which became anti-religious, leading up to the Revolution, set a plan to tax clergymen. 1776, Continental Congress negotiated a war loan of $181,500 from France. 1779, U.S. General and all-around turncoat Benedict Arnold's court-martial for improper conduct. 1788, Maryland votes to cede a 10-square-mile area to become known as the District of Columbia. 1823, The Visit from St. Nicholas by C. Moore is published in the Troy, New York Sentinel. 1832, Dutch troops in Antwerp surrender. 1834, Joseph Hansom of London gets the patent for the Hansom cabs. 1862, Union General Ben the Beast Butler is proclaimed a felon and outlaw and a common enemy of mankind by Jefferson Davis, who was president of the Confederate States of America. 1876, Turkey's first constitution is proclaimed. 1899, British Field Marshal Lord Roberts departs Southampton for South Africa for the Second Boer War. 1900, as American forces defeat Filipino insurgents and oppose civil authority, Filipinos form a federal party with a platform recognizing U.S. sovereignty. 1909, Albert I becomes the third king of the Belgians. This day in 1912 was the first Keystone Cops movie. It was called Hoffmeyer's Legacy. 1912, Indian Revolutionary Underground in Bengal and Punjab, headed by Rash Benhari Bose, attempted to assassinate the Viceroy of India, Lord Harding, by throwing a homemade bomb into the Viceroy's hadal, which was the carriage on top of the elephant during a ceremonial procession in Delhi. Although he was wounded by the bomb, the Viceroy survived. Investigations led to the Delhi conspiracy trial. In 1914, World War I, Australian and New Zealand troops arrive in Cairo. In 1919, the first hospital ship built to move wounded naval personnel is formally launched. 1919, Alice Parker patents the gas heating furnace. 1921, which shows you how they always bite the hand that feeds them, gangster Carlo Gambino entered the U.S. as an illegal immigrant on the SS Vincenzo Florio. 1922, BBC begins daily newscast. 1928, NBC sets up a permanent coast-to-coast radio network. 1933, the Dutch communist Marinus van der Lubbe is sentenced to death by the Nazis for setting the German Reichstag on fire. It was actually, according to everything I've read, done by the Nazis, but this guy was set up to be the fall guy. 1938, Margaret Hamilton, who played the Bad Witch on The Wizard of Oz, her costume caught on fire while filming the movie. 1938, discovery of the first modern coelacanth in South Africa. That was a fish that was supposedly extinct quite a number of million years ago. 1941, on this date, American forces on Wake Island surrendered to the Japanese. 1941, British troops overrun Benghazi and Libya. Also in 41, the Japanese began an assault on Rangoon, Burma. 1946, I hate to say, the University of Tennessee refused to play Duquesne University after they suggested they might use a black player in their basketball game. I don't know what color has to do with anything, but that's just me. All right, we have come to the end of our little history segment for today. You know, tomorrow, as I said earlier, is Christmas Eve. Time of miracles. Well, we were talking yesterday about Islam's three distinct species of intelligent beings. According to the teachings of Islam, they're just three distinct species of intelligent beings in the universe. The angels, that are a higher order of beings created of light, the jinn, who are ethereal, maybe even multidimensional, and in humans. Now, the West has learned a lot of things. The science of alchemy was introduced to the Western world at the beginning of the 2nd century of the AD. Zosimus of Panopolis, self-appointed apologist of alchemy, and cited the passage in Genesis as the origin of the arcane art. The passage he's referring to was, "The sons of God saw the daughters of men were fair." He added the translation that in reward for their favors, the Grigori, or the sons of God, endowed these women with the knowledge of how to make jewels and colorful garments and perfumes with which to enhance their earthly charms. Now, there are 7 principal angels whose favor the alchemists sought to obtain for their transformation of base metals into gold. These were Michael, who was able to dissolve any enmity directed by negative entities toward the alchemist; Gabriel, who fashioned silver and foresaw the future; Samuel, who protected against physical harm; Raphael, Sachael, Ansel, and Casiel, who would create various gems and guard the alchemist from attacks by demons. However, members of the clergy were skeptical that the alchemists were truly calling on angels rather than demons in disguise, and because they recalled the words of the church father Terulian, who confirmed earlier belief the sons of God referred to in Genesis were evil perverters of humans who bequeathed their wisdom to mortals with the sole intention of seducing them to mundane pleasures. See, part of the problem is everybody's so busy pointing at angels and demons and what have you that they don't really stop and apply logic. Now, Eberlin magic provides instructions to the initiates of the magic of light, which will enable them to achieve mastery over the demons and place them under their control. Abramelin, the great magus, learned how to accomplish such a difficult task by undergoing a process of spiritual cleansing and developed a very powerful will. Now, in addition to spiritual and mental exercises, he discovered words of power that can be arranged in magic squares and written on parchment. The proper application of these magical squares, the magus can command the demons in order to assist him in the acquisition of earthly knowledge and power. Now, toward the end of the British period of burning witches at the stake, there was a woman on trial for being a witch. And she had with her a spell written on a piece of paper. And that spell supposedly enabled her to bewitch her neighbors. Now, the judge who heard that case asked to see the spell, and he recognized it as something he himself had written while a college student as a lark. So, of course, he found her not guilty being a witch, but the interesting thing was that it had been used in the intervening years as the basis for quite a lot of what you might call magical shenanigans. Now, many of the landed aristocracy in the Middle Ages agreed with the clergy that an ancient secret society of alchemists had developed a technology given to them by the Grigori, the Nephilim, which they'd managed to keep hidden from outsiders. So the crucial question in perpetual debate was whether the secret ones were benevolently guiding humankind to a time when they might share their accomplishments more openly, or whether they await the appropriate moment to conquer the entire world. See, all during the Middle Ages, the church was pushing the concept that if not for the church, demons would rule mankind, which, of course, gave the minions of the church unbelievable power. And, of course, since the church backed the landed aristocracy, the aristocracy, of course, took the position the church was a major force that had to be reckoned with. Now, down through the centuries, mysterious beings have appeared at certain moments in human history and provided convincing demonstrations showing that impossible inventions are possible. Helvetius, the grandfather of celebrated philosopher, that same name, was an alchemist who labored ceaselessly to fathom the mystery of the Philosopher's Stone, the legendary catalyst that would transmute base metals into gold. It was one day in 1666 when he was working in his study at The Hague, a stranger dressed in black, as befitting a respected burgher of North Holland, appeared and informed him he would remove all the alchemist's doubts about the existence of the Philosopher's Stone, because he possessed it. Well, Helvetius decided to indulge the man, who appeared very simple and modest in his demeanor. The stranger immediately took out of his pocket a small ivory box containing three pieces of metal, the color of brimstone, extremely heavy. With these three bits of metal, he told Helvetius he would make as many as 20 tons of gold. Well, for his part, the alchemist examined the pieces of metal very tentatively, and seeing that they were very brittle, he took the opportunity to scrape off a small portion with his thumbnail. He then gave the three pieces of metal back to his visitor and asked him to perform the process of transmutation in front of him. The stranger immediately said he wasn't allowed to do so. It was enough that he had verified the existence of the metal to Helvetius. His purpose only was to offer him encouragement in his experiments. Well, after the man left, Helvetius procured a crucible and a portion of lead into which, when in the state of fusion, he threw the stolen grain he had secretly scraped from the Philosopher's Stone. Well, to his disappointment, the grain evaporated altogether, leaving the lead in its original state. Thinking he'd been made a fool of in the mad burgher's whimsy, Helvetius went back to his own experimentation in obtaining the Philosopher's Stone. A few weeks later, he got another visit from this mysterious stranger. And he said, "Explain the process by which you pretend to transmute lead. If you can't do it, then leave." Okay. He agreed to do a demonstration of the Philosopher's Stone. One grain is sufficient, but it's necessary to envelop it in a ball of wax before throwing it into the molten metal. Otherwise, extreme volatility will cause it to vaporize. Well, to Helvetius' astonishment and delight, the stranger transmuted several ounces of lead into gold. Then he prevented the alchemist to repeat the experiment himself. And Helvetius converted 6 ounces of lead into very fine, pure gold. Well, Helvetius unfortunately found it impossible to keep a secret of such immense value and importance. And very soon the word of his remarkably successful experiment spread all over The Hague. And Helvetius actually demonstrated the power of the Philosopher's Stone in the presence of the Prince of Orange and many times afterward until he had exhausted the supply of catalytic pieces he had received from this mysterious stranger. Now, search as he might, Helvetius was never able to find this man again, or learn his name. And he never saw him after that. Well, Helvetius said the respected burgher of North Holland, as he called himself, appeared modest and simple. Didn't appear to be alien or the least bit unusual in his appearance. But it was his incredible knowledge that startled and inspired the alchemist of Helvetius' day. And while these learned and determined men never did acquire the Philosopher's Stone that would transmute lead into gold, they did fashion the seeds of the science of chemistry that's accomplished so many transmutations of the human environment and the human condition over the last 300 or 400 years. It was out of the smoky laboratories that the alchemist, Albert Legrand, produced potassium, lye. Lehmann Law prepared bicarbonate of potassium. Paracelsus described zinc and introduced chemical compounds in medicine. Blaise Vigenère discovered benzoic acid. Basil Valentine perfected sulfuric acid. Johann Friedrich Boetticher became the first European to produce porcelain. So you have to ask yourself, did any of these well-known names in the field of chemistry receive visitations from this mysterious black-garbed individual? Well, of course, each of these discoveries were important. But there were rumors lying amid the musty pages of certain ancient alchemical laboratories. There were recorded experiments with photography, radio transmission, phonography, and aerial flight. Throughout the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, there are many scholars who claim they had received late-night visits from mysterious members of a secret society who had accomplished the transmutation of metals, determined the means of prolonging life, the knowledge to see and to hear what was occurring in distant places, and even the ability to travel across the heavens in heavier-than-air vehicles. Is there somewhere a secret society who has this knowledge and ability? Eliphas Levi, also known as Alphonse Louis Constant, was born in France about 1810. He was a son of a shoemaker. He was a pious boy. His parents decided Alphonse should be educated for the life of a parish priest. So he became a deacon, took a vow of celibacy, and seemed destined for a quiet life in the clergy. But his studies of the arcane convinced Deacon Constant that at some point during the ages, the theologians of the church had confused Lucifer, the bearer of light, with Satan, the prince of darkness, and had unfairly judged him. Such a benign recasting of the angel who, according to church teachings, led to revolt in heaven didn't sit well at all with his superiors, and Deacon Constant was eventually expelled from the Roman Catholic Church. So Alphonse Louis Constant assumed the identity of Eliphas Levi and began to devote his time to an intense study of alchemy and the occult. Very often his focus was on the Kabbalah and the Tarot, believing firmly the ancient cards depicted a concise summary of all the revelations that had come down to humankind through the ages. He saw in the symbolism of the tarot cards the key to the Egyptian hieroglyphs, the mysteries of Solomon, and the truths hidden in the apocryphal text of the Book of Enoch and the scrolls of Hermes Trismegistus. To do a spread of the tarot, and Levi's opinion was to establish communication with the spirit world. To seek within the tarot might bring the serious magician a clue to the manipulation of the natural and divine energy that permeated all of nature. And he believed that the existence of such a force was to discover the great arcanum of practical magic. So it was, his Doctrine of Transcendental Magic was published in 1855. It was followed by Rituals of Transcendental Magic in 1856. Now, he died in 1875, esteemed by many and hailed as the last of the alchemists. Of course, certain of his writings have been criticized by suggesting that his imagination may, in some instances, have surpassed his actual knowledge of the arcane. Well, if you go along this road, of course, you have to have come in contact with what's called the ultimate secret society. That's the Illuminati, a cabal that stretches its tentacles of control to encompass the entire world, according to many conspiracy theorists. According to these same conspiracy theorists, the members of the Illuminati are the real rulers of the world. They've been pulling the strings from behind the scenes for centuries. They've infiltrated every government and every aspect of society around the planet. And some say their ultimate goal is to accomplish a satanic new world order. The one world government that would prepare Earth's citizens for the coming of the Antichrist. Well, the term Illuminati was actually first used by Spanish occultists toward the end of the 15th century to signify these alchemists and magicians who appeared to possess the light of spiritual illumination from a higher source. Terme originated in the Gnostic dualism of the forces of light and darkness, and many individuals who claim to be Illuminati, those enlightened by higher wisdom, joined the Rosicrucians and took refuge in France to escape the fires of the Spanish Inquisition. Now, the actual Illuminati of history, rather than those of legend, was a secret society known as the Order of the Illuminati and founded in the city of Ingolstadt in the southern German monarchy of Bavaria on May 1st, 1776. It was formed by Adam Weishaupt, a 28-year-old professor of religious law. It started out with just 5 members. And the order grew slowly, numbering about 60 in 5 cities in 1780. The professor deliberately blended mysticism into the workings of the Brotherhood in order to make his agenda of republicanism appear to be more mysterious than those of a political reform group. In 1777, he joined the Masons in Munich and adopted many of their classes and orders and promised his initiates they would get a special communication of occult knowledge as they advanced higher in the ranks of the Illuminati. So I guess the question is, was he legitimate or a sandwich or two short of a full picnic? He had taken great care to enlist as many young men of wealth and position as possible, maintaining that philanthropy as well as mysticism was a principal goal of the society. He also managed to create around himself a great aura of mystery, permitting himself to be seen by none but those in the higher ranks of the society, encouraging the myth that he was an adept of such great power. He existed largely in an invisible presence. Initiates into the ranks of the Illuminati underwent secret rites, wore bizarre costumes, participated in grotesque ceremonies that were designed to give complete obedience to Weishaupt. Soon the Illuminati became a force to be reckoned with behind the scenes in Germany's political life, and its members worked secretly to overthrow both church and state. While structuring society along the lines of the classes and orders of the Masons, the Illuminati included levels of enlightenment that could be achieved by undergoing initiation through various mystical rites and ceremonies. And although Weishaupt sought to establish a new world order in the late 18th century, the Illuminati was destroyed within 15 years of its beginning. In June of 1784, Carl Theodore issued an edict outlawing all secret societies in his provinces. In March of 1785, another edict specifically condemned the Illuminati. Weishaupt had already fled to a neighboring province in February 1785, where he hoped to inspire the loyal members of the Illuminati to continue on as a secret society. 1787, the Duke of Bavaria issued a final edict against the Order of the Illuminati, and Weishaupt apparently faded into obscurity. Although he never realized his goal of a German Republic and the overthrowing of the European monarchies, the sparks he ignited with his Illuminati would soon burst into the flames of the French Revolution in 1789. Interestingly enough, one of the reasons that I have read for the exposure of the plans of the Illuminati, one of their couriers was struck by lightning by riding along a road. And when they came to get the body, they found all the papers that had come from his saddlebags. And it revealed the plot to overthrow both church and state. You know, some contemporary students of the history of alchemy have stated that crumbling, yellowed records of the alchemists remain in dusty libraries. More than 100,000 ancient volumes written in a code that has never been sufficiently deciphered. Now, certain master magicians, disciples of the Grigori, individuals of exceptional intellect, power, and wealth, actually did achieve a high degree of technical accomplishment centuries ago, and they'd very well be responsible for a good many of the strange and mysterious vehicles that have been seen in our skies. Any alien or multidimensional life form should have established an alliance with the society of humans that easily appeared to be the more advanced and worthy of receiving the benefits of their otherworldly super science than that secret society could, in fact, be responsible for what appeared to be, to the uninitiated, to be marvels beyond human understanding or capability. Now, numerous European secret societies have been at least partially molded around the belief that a secret society centuries ago achieved a high level of scientific knowledge that they've guarded through from the rest of humanity. And according to these occult groups, certain men of genius in ancient Egypt and Persia were given access to the records of the advanced technologies of the antediluvian world. Hundreds of years ago, these ancient masters learned to duplicate many of the feats of the Titans of Atlantis, or the otherworldly wonders of the Gregori. You know, the decision to form a society within a society may have been based on the members' highly developed moral sense and their recognition of the awesome position of responsibility which the discovery of such applications of ancient knowledge could have placed on them. They may have decided to keep their own counsel till the rest of the world had become enlightened enough to deal wisely with such a high degree of technical accomplishments. You know, from time to time, the secret society may decide the time is propitious to make one of its discoveries known to the outside world. Such intervention in the affairs of the great mass of humanity is usually accomplished by carefully feeding certain fragments of research to outside scientists whose work and attitude have been adjudged as particularly deserving. When the scientists accomplish the breakthrough in their research, they credit the success of the experiments to their own diligence, and the secrecy that society prizes so much is maintained. On the other hand, the secret society may feel little or no responsibility of any kind to those humans outside their own group. They may be merely biding their time till they turn the great mass of humanity into their slaves. For hundreds of years, certain scholars have worried about global conspiracies being conducted in secret by such groups as the Knights Templar, the Rosicrucians, the Vril, the Thule, and the Illuminati. They may all be waiting for the right moment for world domination. You know, in recent years, more and more paranormal researchers have become fascinated with the jinn of Arabian and Muslim traditions. The jinn are said to be demons who possess a wide variety of supernatural powers. Some scholars declared the jinn a bit lower than the angels because they were created of smoke and fire. Their leader is Ibli, or if you watch Battlestar Galactica, Count Ibli, once hailed as Azazel, the Islamic counterpart of the devil. In pre-Islamic Arabia, the jinn were revered as godlike beings who inhabited a world parallel to that of humans. Now, one of the questions that has been asked many, many times is why have so many disparate paranormal phenomena seem to be strangely connected? That connection to many has also almost seemed supernatural itself. Why did Bigfoot appear with such unnerving frequency, right when flying saucers have flown above the area? And why did those who claim to have seen these flying saucers so often experience bizarre poltergeist-like symptomology in the days before and after their sighting? Why did it seem to have an unusual affinity with females going through the protracted awkward stages of puberty? And why did pubescent females often report episodes of psychokinesis? It is said there are five basic beliefs that bind all Muslims, known as the pillars of Islam. And despite whatever other theological differences there might be, almost all believe in these five pillars. What's not often appreciated is that Muslims are also bound to believe in a concept known as, in Arabic, as the Ghareb, or unseen world. You know, just as many Christians believe in the existence of angels and heaven and other things along those lines, So do the other religions on this planet. Now, the five pillars of Islam that I mentioned, declaration of faith, obligatory prayer, compulsory giving, fasting in the month of Ramadan, and the pilgrimage to Mecca. Now, what a particular location may have to do, that would be like all the Christians going to Bethlehem at Christmas. Among the American Indians, there's the legend of the white buffalo. A group of hunters were stunned by a blinding light that suddenly appeared before them as they approached a herd of buffalo. And in that beam of light, a magnificent white buffalo materialized. Then it shapeshifted into the form of a beautiful woman dressed in white. Her mouth moved and her voice brought quiet to the valley. She said, "I was here before the rains and the violet sea. I was here before the snows and the hail. I was here before the mountains and the winds. I'm the spirit of nature. I'm in the light that fills the earth and in the darkness of night. I give color to nature, for I'm nature's growth and fruits. I'm again in nature where themes of mystic wisdom are found. I'm in your chants and laughter. I'm in the tears that flow from sorrow. I'm in the bright, joyous eyes of the children. I'm in the substance that gives unity, completeness, and oneness. I'm in the mountains as a symbol to all humankind when earth's face is being scarred with spiritual undoing. I'm in you when you walk the simple path of nature. I'm in you when you show love of humankind, for I'm also give love to those who are loving. I'm in the response of love among all humans, for this is a path that I find a blessing in the fulfillment of the Great Spirit. I must leave now, but I leave you to follow the simple path of nature." Well, the legend of the white buffalo is found in many, many Indian tribes. But basically what it says is there's a spirit that flows through all of nature and sometimes reprimands those who don't respect its primal request for unity, completeness, and love. You know, all cultures have their stories of the nature entities that appear so often to be a mirror image of humankind and somehow indicate that humans are part of a larger community of intelligence, both physical and non-physical. Since the beginning of time, it would seem, the human race and the nature spirits have shared this planet, experiencing a strange symbiotic relationship. In ancient Rome, the household spirits were called lares, the tradition of each home having its own guardian of the hearth, survived throughout most of Europe. You know, ignoring the warnings of the clergy, medieval alchemists believed that they could acquire control over the elementals, the unseen intelligences who inhabit the four basic elements of the material plane. Creatures of the air are known as the sylphs of the earth, gnomes of fire, salamanders, and of water, the nymph, or undines. According to ancient tradition, it's believed that before the fall, Adam had complete control over these entities. After the fall from grace in the Garden of Eden, Adam lost his command over the elementals, but he's still able to demand their obedience by means of certain incantations and spells. That same ancient tradition suggests that such communication with the unseen entities can be established by the sincere magician who holds out to them and seeks the old spells. Now, the appearance of the elementals, when discerned by the human eye, is that of attractive males and beautiful females. And because they're created by the pure essences of their element, it's said they live for centuries. But because of a fashion of terrestrial elements, their souls are not immortal as are those of humans. If, however, an elemental should be joined in marriage to a human, their union can transform the creature's soul into a spirit that may enjoy eternal life. Some of the greatest figures of antiquity, such as Zoroaster, Alexander, and Merlin, were reported to have been the children of elementary spirits. And while most traditions hold the elementals to be friendly to humans, some authorities warn that each of the four elements contains a number of mischief makers and entities that tend more toward the demonic than the angelic. Now, according to the survey that was done, 36% claimed to have seen elves and fairies in some form of nature spirit. In certain cases, such a being may have considered a deserted house or barn as its own. Generally, if the elfin entity understands that a human wishes to occupy the dwelling place, and if it's treated with respect, it'll quietly move out. At most, a token gift of fruit, nut, or meal could compensate the spirit squatter and make it agree to move to a more natural habitat. But if you don't follow the basic rules, it can become quite a battle of wills. Now, basically, everything that I have gone over is to make the point that across the globe, in almost every society, there are beliefs that there are others that occupy this planet with us. Whether you call them elementals, or spirits, or fairies, or elves, or whatever. One of the best demonstrations of this, when they were running electrical lines in Ireland, they got to one point where they needed to put a pole on a little hillock outside a village. And the supervisor was told that that was a fairy mound and the pole wouldn't stand. Well, he was a very practical, down-to-earth man, and he said, balderdash. And they put the pole, and every time they came back to look at it, it was canted one direction or another. And eventually, he went to the village and asked the person that had told him about the fairy mound, what could he do? And they said, you ask their permission, you make an offering, and maybe they will agree. Well, he thought it was silly, but he did it anyway. And after that, the pole never moved off center, which was certainly support for the idea that there are other forces here besides us. Well, on that note, we come to the end of today's show. Tomorrow's Christmas Eve. We're going to have a special show. So until tomorrow, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.